Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Here's the podcast from Middays with Susie Larson. Enjoy the conversation. It's only just a matter of. Welcome to Middays. I'm Susie Larson. So honored to get to spend this time with you. I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, deepen your understanding of God's word, and that heighten your awareness of God's very real presence in your life. Well, my guest today says that this next generation quite literally has the potential to change the world. Yet they face spiritual, emotional, intellectual, and moral challenges like no other group before them. Time is short and the challenges are pressing and the need is great, my guest says. And now more than ever, we must embrace strategies that help young people set their hope in God, to remember the works of God and keep the commands of God. Sean McDowell's my guest today to talk about the book he co-authored with J. Warner Wallace titled, So the Next Generation Will Know, Preparing Young Christians for a Challenging World. We've got four copies to give away. You can text, call, or email to get in the drawing. Here's the number, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Email middays at myfaithradio.com. The phone lines will be open. If you have objections to the faith, or if you've got a loved one who does and you want to know, how do I answer them? How do I speak to the questions that are on their heart? Sean's here and happy to answer those questions for you. 877-933-2484. We're going to get him on in a moment. But first, I have a quick announcement. Somebody has a birthday today. Yeehaw! All right, I just got to give a shout out to my amazing producer, Carissa Rogers. It's her birthday today. When you call in, she's the voice you hear. She's the one who schedules guests. She is such a woman of God, so humble and yet so capable. I don't mean and yet, humble and so capable. So those who she connects with those who are our guests, and she connects with you, the listener. She is amazing in every way. So I want you to give her a shout out. If you want to email, send her a note that way, middays@myfaithradio.com, or you can text in a shout out. We'll make sure we get those to her as well. 877-933-2484. Tell her how much you appreciate her and how much you love her. All right. Dr. Sean McDowell is a best-selling author, co-author and or editor of more than 18 books, including Evidence That Demands a Verdict, which he co-authored with his father, Josh McDowell. He's also an associate professor of apologetics at Talbot School of Theology. He speaks internationally on a variety of topics related to culture, students, and apologetics, and we are so honored to have him with us today. Dear Sean, welcome to the program.
Oh, Susie, thanks for having me on.
Looking forward to the conversation. Hey, we love to start every day talking scripture, and I'm wondering if there's a verse you've been hanging around these days that you can share with us.
Well, I will share with you pretty much my favorite verse of all time. It's Hebrews 10:39, which says, "For we are not of those who shrink back and are destroyed, but of those who believe and are saved." And I love that verse because right now it seems like as Christians, we just operate in fear so often. What's happening to our political rights? What's changing in the world around us? We're operating by fear. And this verse reminds us that we are not of those who shrink back and are destroyed, but we believe and are saved. So my favorite passage is Hebrews 10:39.
Wow, I appreciate you bringing that up. Tomorrow we're actually going to do a whole show on fear. And, you know, this was a question I was going to ask later in the show, but I think it fits here now, especially talking to parents who's, you know, trying to raise their kids in this culture. You know, fear's never a motivator, and yet it gets in there for us because there seems to be a lot to be afraid of. Speak to that parent who maybe tends to overreact and overcorrect because of fear of what they're seeing on the news, what they're seeing in the culture, and fearing that their child will wander.
Well, first off, I understand. I have three kids, a son who's 15, a daughter who's 12, and a son who is 6. So these fears can easily creep into me, and I can start to feel, gosh, am I inadequate? Is the culture going to capture my kids? I understand those fears. I think they're human nature, but the verse I always come back to in 1 John chapter 4 is that perfect love casts out fear. Perfect love casts out fear. Our only response can be to love God more and to love our kids, because fear is actually self-based. We think about ourselves in fear, but what does love do? Love is other focus. So I think the best response to fear, even when I speak, sometimes you look out and get fear and you go, gosh, I want to mess up. What if I look bad? If I start thinking about the audience, you go, how do I love the audience? It shifts my attention from fear to love. So my encouragement to parents who look at their kids, just say, you know what? God is sovereign. Remember that. And just respond by doing everything you can to love this generation. Then no matter what they do, God will say, well done, my good and faithful servant.
That's so good. I've shared this before, but I think maybe someone else needs to hear it today. But excuse me, when one of my sons was wandering and I was freaking out because we were so passionate and purposeful about the way we raised our kids, to hear the voice of God, to love the voice of God, to follow him. And one of my other sons grabbed me and said, Mom, you raised us right. And he's picking up on your fear. And what you need to do is grab him by the shoulders, look him in the eye and say, I raised you right. There's good stuff in you. And I'm trusting God in you. He's going to lead you in the way that you should go. You're asking some questions. You're wandering. You're making some choices. But I'm going to trust God more than I'm going to be afraid, because I raised you right. And, you know, he said, just communicate confidence to him. And I got to tell you, that took all kinds of weight off my shoulders. But I saw him stand up straighter when I did that. I just thought, out of the mouth of my other son. That was great wisdom, don't you think?
Oh, my goodness. I think, isn't it great when our kids come around and start encouraging us that we need to hear? You know, I'll tell you, I grew up with a father who's an apologist, written a ton of books, spoken around the world, how we know Christianity is true. And when I was I must have been about 19 years old, I just had a lot of doubts, and I wasn't sure if I really thought Christianity was true. I never gave it up, but I just was at the point like, am I going to really base my life on this? And I told my dad, we were at coffee in Breckenridge. I said, you know, I'm not sure if I really believe this is true. I want to know the truth, but I'm not sure. And he looks at me and goes, son, I think that's great. And my next thought was, did you just hear what I said? Like, time out. I'm questioning the faith you raised me in. And he goes, son, I've raised you to love truth. You can't live on my convictions. You have to discover what is true and live it. He said, you know what? I'm confident you'll continue to believe in Jesus if you seek after truth, because Jesus is the truth. And you know your mom and I will love you no matter what. It was exactly that moment of what you're talking about. Like, my dad was just showing confidence. He was showing love. He wasn't motivated by fear. And it really did free me up to say, okay, my parents are going to love me no matter what, which I knew. But at that moment, it just, you know, made it that much more real. I've got to discover what I think is true.
Did your dad ever talk later? Was he at all freaking out on the inside? I mean, I suppose he's been so trained in this realm that he probably, what he said, he probably actually really felt. But did he talk about any kind of flutter of disruption within him as his son is saying that?
Well, I love that you asked this question. There's a couple of things about my dad. Number one, he's just the consummate optimist. He doesn't live his life with regrets. I mean, I asked him that recently, and he goes, I just don't really have regrets. I just keep moving forward. He's the pioneer, trailblazer kind of personality. I don't have time to look behind me. But when I did ask him, I said, Dad, honestly, what was really going through your mind when I said that? He goes, you know, I was confident you'd stay in the faith. And I said, why? And this is like 2 or 3 years ago I asked him. He said, because of the depth of relationship that you and I had. Now, think about that, Susie. It was the relationship that we had that he was confident would ground me in the truth. And that's something that's often missed. It's both relationships. This is how Jim and I frame the book, is that we have to teach truth to this generation, but we have to do it through relationships. It's not either or, it's both and.
You know, Craig Rochelle once, in one, a leadership message he spoke, he said, he was speaking to older leaders and saying, you know what, this young generation, they're not looking for skinny jeans and this rad haircut. In fact, they can read that a mile away. What they want is someone who's sincerely interested in them, someone who'll listen to them, and someone who knows right from wrong and who lives integrity and can impart that. He said, if you can live what you say you believe and live your convictions according to Scripture, he said, they will be lining up to talk with you. And I thought, good for you, because so often we make the mistake of trying to be like a younger generation as if that's what they need to hear from us. But I would imagine they're kind of, you know, irritated by that thought. We're trying to be in a different generation than we are versus being who we are and the wisdom that we've acquired over time, you know?
Well, in my interaction with skeptics and non-believers, one thing I hear frequently, and most of them had left the church, is they'll express their respect for ministers or just believers that take their faith seriously and actually live it out. Mm. And I think that's because this generation, you know, they have, because of smartphones, they have so many messages marketed to them nonstop, and they really have kind of a phony detector. And when somebody is real and genuine and doesn't have a hidden agenda and just at least communicates, you know what, I really care about you and I really believe that this is true, I think it catches them off guard. And like you said, it's kind of a magnet to them. Like, what makes you tick? Why are you different? So living out our faith today always has been a powerful apologetic. But especially today, I think it's that much more important that Christians live it out.
And you talk about in the book that we don't really parent our kids for very long. We've got them for, you know, elementary, junior high, and high school. And you said the season passes quickly, and it requires our intentionality. And, you know, I think some parents, many parents, are very intentional, but sometimes maybe intentional about a good thing and not the best thing. I mean, you look at, you know, I'm an athlete and I love sports, but you look at what's happened to sports. It's like they're just blatantly, you know, tournaments are often scheduled for Sundays. And the chances of, you know, most of these kids making it to the pros, and at what cost? But I mean, I want you to just speak to that, being intentional, but discerning the best from the good. What do you say?
Oh, that is a great question. One my wife and I wrestle with all the time. There's no easy answers to that. But what we try to do kind of in the book is to encourage people. And my wife and I just take a step back and say, okay, where's our priorities here? What really matters? Not in the urgency of the moment, but in the big picture things. And that helps reframe it. And the other way we try to get people thinking in the book, Jim Wallace and I do, is we say, look, we're not giving you a new program that you have to add and do. Rather, let's look at the opportunities right in front of us and be more strategic about how we utilize those opportunities in building relationships with our kids, but also in teaching them a worldview. So even just thinking that through from the top down, rather than just running from moment to moment, practice to practice, which we tend to do, can transform the way we relate to our kids.
Yeah, well, let's pause here. I'm talking to Sean McDowell. He co-authored with J. Warner Wallace this book, So the Next Generation Will Know, Preparing Young Christians for a Challenging World. And he said, quite literally, this generation has the potential to change the world, but we need to equip them. We welcome your questions, your comments. Love to hear from you. 877-933-2484. You can text or call or email middays@myfaithradio.com. When I come back, we'll come back. I'll share a little bit about what I read about what has affected kids in the youth group after the fact. So certain things may get them in the door, but what keeps them in the faith? We'll talk about that in a moment. You can never fall too high, so fast, so far that you can't get back. When you're lost, where you was, never too late, so bad, so much that you can't change. Thanks so much for tuning in to Middays. I'm Susie Larson talking to Sean McDowell, Dr. Sean McDowell, who co-authored with J. Warner Wallace the book, So the Next Generation Will Know, Preparing Young Christians for a Challenging World. What an important book. What an important book. We've got 4 copies to give away. You can enter the drawing a number of ways. You can email middays@myfaithradio.com. Don't forget that mailing address. Text or call 877-933-2484. Don't forget your questions if you've got them. And, you know, Sean, I read a report a number of years ago, a study that said the smoke and mirrors, large screen TVs, and video games may get kids in the door for the youth group when they followed a certain remnant or group of students all the way through to their adulthood. They realized that may get them in the door, but it doesn't keep them in the faith. The consistent common denominators, the two things, were the teaching of the Word of God and the service to those less fortunate. So if they had plenty of opportunities to get out of their bubble and serve those who had greater needs than they did, and they were repeatedly taught the Word of God, those were the two things that went deep into the soil of their hearts. What do you say about that?
I think that's right. I think sometimes in the youth group, we want to compete with the world and say, let's have better graphics, let's have cooler technology. And I think, you know what, if that's the draw in, then they'll leave when they can experience that somewhere else. Hmm. What does Christianity uniquely offer? Well, number one, it's actually true. Number two, there's meaning. And number three, I think genuine community rooted in the way God has made us to experience in the body of Christ. And that's reflected in the studies that you're talking about. When kids come and they feel like they're learning something that has substance and applies to their life and is interesting and relevant, kids will stay. But when they also feel challenged, like, wow, I can make a difference. I can serve the poor. I can go on a mission trip. This is an experience that is so much more fulfilling than some of the just experiences that our culture has to offer. And then third, I'd say when kids really feel like they belong and they're known and they're important and they connect with other students that are there and connect with the leadership, then they stay. And this reality needs to transform the way we do ministry today.
You say some of the best questions parents can ask, or even youth pastors, I would say, are these. What do you think is the most difficult thing to believe about Christianity? Of all the things the pastor said today, what seemed the most difficult to believe? What is your biggest question or doubt about Christianity? Talk about ways to answer some of the common ways, I mean, how a person, a parent or a youth leader would reply to some of the most common answers to that question.
Well, what we're trying to do when we ask those questions is to foster conversation with young people. And I found as I look at Scripture that Jesus asks a ton of questions when he knows the answers. Sometimes with this generation, because we're older and wiser and more experienced, we default to lecturing, giving quick answers, and then moving on. What I want to say is research actually shows that worldviews are best passed on relationally in conversation, even if we don't have a simple answer. So this is a generation that has a lot of questions and they have a lot of doubts. Naturally, that makes sense because of the access to information. But it's not doubts that typically hijack a faith. It's unexpressed doubts. So the kinds of questions that Jim and I are posing here are saying, hey, what was hard to believe? What was easy to believe? Really letting this generation know, you know what? There's not always easy answers. Christianity makes sense, and it can guide us in our lives, but it's okay to have tough questions and be in the faith. If we would present the faith that much more, rather than being simplistic as we often do, I think kids would grab onto it much longer.
Boy. And you talked about this yesterday on the show, but how many people who've wandered from the faith said later they had tough questions and they were met by, you're just supposed to believe. And truly, the recipient of the question maybe felt intimidated by the question. So instead of saying, I don't know, or that's a challenging question, I'm going to dig in and study and find out that answer. Thanks for being so thoughtful. They turn it around on the other person saying, you just really need to believe, or doubt your doubts or whatever. And the person asking the question couldn't respect that and said, if that's my option, I'm walking away. I mean, have you seen the same?
Well, it's really heartbreaking. When I get a chance to meet with like skeptics and atheist groups and talk to non-believers, you know, frequently I'll hear that most of them had some experience in church, which is true, statistically speaking. In this generation, most at least had some experience in a youth group or church in some capacity. But second, they'll say, you know, I just had questions and it didn't make sense. And either people just told me to believe and didn't give me answers, or they just gave me simplistic answers that didn't really fit the nuances and the difficulty of the world that we live in. So I think sometimes just saying to a young person, gosh, that's a great question. I don't know the answer to that, but I'll pray with you. Let's think about it. Let's seek an answer together. That is just such a relational, healthy way to approach a question. Now, if you know an answer, certainly there's times to give it to it and say, you know what, I've thought about this. Here's the way I process it, make sense of it. Tell me what you think about that answer and have a dialogue.
I mean, that's really what won the late Nabil Qureshi over. I mean, he's a brilliant mind, and he had a Christian who was able to stand, you know, kind of be his match intellectually, who had answers. And over again, those answers got in, truth got in, and it softened his heart until he really, I mean, what it cost him to leave his family faith, being a Muslim, becoming a Christian, is a marvel, and what God has done in his life is a marvel as well. But anyway, I digress. You know, it's been said that most young people abandon their faith when they leave home, but you say actually the departure happens before they leave home. Say more about that.
Yeah, let me clarify. It's not that most young people abandon their faith, but of those who do abandon the church and or the faith, it starts much earlier. And to give some context, my father's spoken at 1,200 universities, and he used to speak in university campuses. And then about in the 90s, he shifted to high school. Then in the 2000s, especially smartphones began to realize that the questions that kids ask about life that are worldview forming are really not at the university or high school. They're really in junior high or even earlier. Now, a lot of kids don't realize this, but young people, 8, 10, 12 years old, are starting to develop a belief system about the world that shapes if they think the world is good, if they think there's purpose, if they think there's a real right and wrong. Is there life after death? Does my life have any meaning? These are relational and worldview questions that probably come to the surface a little bit more, say, in high school and beyond. But the seeds of that departure that of the kids who walk away and disengage, I think, start very, very early.
What are some things a parent could watch for? I mean, you think that makes so much sense when you think of even like the suicide rate seems to be the average, you know, suicide that you're seeing is in younger and younger ages. It's unbelievable. So they're having to reckon with some significant life and death things. But just in general, what should a parent watch for as far as symptoms of questions that maybe need some answering?
Gosh, that's hard when it comes to kids' worldview and suicide. Those are very different issues. Yeah. I would just say, in general, parents need to be more attentive to this generation than they've ever been. And some of that is really just building a relationship, entering into your kids' world. And parents often, in particular, tends to be a mom, just has a meter if things are going okay or if they're not. So I think if parents are involved, and my wife and I are always talking about our kids, watching their moods, how they're behaving, and just kind of gauging and making sure everything is okay. If you sense that something isn't, address it. Talk with your young person. Potentially get counseling. Go to a pastor. But if you have that urge and you just think, gosh, I don't know if something's fully right, don't let that go. Address it and deal with it, because especially on the internet, there's so much information coming to kids, giving them bad ideas about themselves, bad ideas about the world, and a lot of options how to handle that hurt and depression and pain in ways that just wasn't there for previous generations.
Well, we just got about a minute before we take our break here. Give some examples of maybe check-in questions so they don't start to sound redundant, but they are fresh, but they're really intentional as far as connecting with kids and just seeing how they're doing.
You know what? One of the things, rather than just particular questions to me, is just carve out time to have family meals as best as you can. Hmm. And sometimes I read the scripture in mind. Sometimes I'll share something. We'll talk about a movie. Sometimes it'll be a worldview conversation. Sometimes we'll just talk about the NBA finals and superheroes and whatever's going on. But that regular family time, you can just sense and kind of see where kids are at, and they can only hide it so long. So it's not so much in like, this is a super gold question, but that you're just carving out relational time and particular meals to just be together, relate, pray, talk, laugh, tell stories, and then the intuitive parent will pick up on it.
That is so good. And that goes back to what your dad was doing. Just that depth of relationship gives you access to the deeper questions. Talking to Sean McDowell, a listener texted in and said their 14-year-old has decided they're transgender. We're going to address that question when we come back. Don't go away. More great conversation in just a moment. Thanks so much for tuning in to Middays. I'm Susie Larson talking to Dr. Sean McDowell, co-author of the book with J. Warner Wallace, So the Next Generation Will Know, Preparing Young Christians for a Challenging World. It's like a handbook. There's so much here. Just if you've ever felt ill-equipped in the area of apologetics, this book is so for you. But it also really describes this next generation, what their tendencies are, their likes, their dislikes, what they notice, what they're passionate about. We've got four copies. Love for you to text if you want in the drawing, or email. Text 877-933-2484. The phone lines are open if you want to call. I know some are shy about getting on the air. You don't have to get on the air. Just tell Carissa what your question is. We'll pass it along. Also, you can email middays@myfaithradio.com. So, Sean, this listener writes in, our 14-year-old has decided they're transgender. When they demanded exterior changes or even invasive things like hormones, and we tried to have a discussion with them about it, they threatened us, saying, if you don't support me, I'm out of here. My counselor helped me make an exit plan on how to be emancipated if it comes to that. Oh, my word. We have intentionally raised our kids in a Christian home, but they're rejecting any mention of God or the Bible. How do we not react in fear? I'm God bless you. I can only imagine. What do you say, Sean?
Oh, first off, my heart breaks for the
Yeah.
person who wrote this in. I can
Wow.
feel just the pain coming through the email. And I'd say a few things. Number one, you're not alone. I get these kind of questions and emails all the time. This is a phenomena that has increased, and there's actually data showing that more and more people are identifying this way. So you're not alone. And second, don't view yourself as a failure. Please give yourself grace through this. It's tempting when our kids make mistakes to take it personally, but that's not going to do any good. So give yourself some grace here as you think about this. My general posture would be, is if you've raised your, I don't remember, I didn't hear, your son or daughter in the faith, that now is not the time to lecture with scripture or try to advance the faith. I think now is the time, obviously, to pray for your child and to do everything you can to keep that relationship going without compromising your deepest convictions. So step into this relationship and say, you know what, we want to listen, we want to understand, we love you, you know where we're coming from, but we will stand by you as our son or daughter, no matter what. That is never going to change. And just letting your child know that is vital. Now, as far as specific resources, there's a couple that may help you because you really want to get educated on this issue. There's a lot of bad information out there. A friend of mine, Preston Sprinkle, has an organization called the Center for Faith, Sexuality, and Gender. The Center for Faith, Sexuality, and Gender. And there are some pastoral, parenting, practical resources on there that I really trust scripturally and scientifically on the question of transgender. So again, check out the Center for Faith, Sexuality, and Gender. And then I recently had a podcast. I host a podcast called Think Biblically. And about 3 weeks ago, posted one on the transgender ideology. The first half is the big picture of the ideology that's happening. And the second is very pastoral, practical approaches to deal with this in individual lives. So it's called Think Biblically. If you search for transgender ideology, I think it'll come up and start to give you tools. The last thing I would say is I would really encourage you to go to your church and try to find other parents who are going through similar conversations and issues with their kids on the LGBTQ kind of spectrum. Pray together, support each other, talk it through, and make sure there's people in your life that are supporting you and helping you through this.
Such good advice. And Sean, I've also heard it's important, once you've made your point, to not let that be lead with that conversation every single time when you're connecting with your child, that you want to have other conversations, as you say, laugh, build other experiences so that relationship stays really connected, as you said. And also, I've mentioned this on the air before, so forgive me if you've heard this before, friends, but it's worth repeating to this dear brokenhearted parent. But I interviewed a couple young men who had left the faith, left the church, and entered into the homosexual lifestyle. And one of them, the mom, was so devastated. She kept trying to beg him back in. But he said the more she begged and reacted in fear, the more he dug his heels in. But all of a sudden, the Lord spoke to her one day and said, kind of like, put your own oxygen mask on first. Nurture your relationship with me. When he starts to see that the joy of the Lord really is your strength, he'll make a distinction between light and dark. So she suddenly let go, and she entrusted him to the Lord because he was a young adult. And she went after it with God. In her quiet time, she just really detached from what he does versus who she is to the Lord. And he said, in the studio, after coming back to faith, he said, the joy on her countenance became so bright, he said, that when I left her presence, the starkness of the darkness that I was walking into was so real that it just became so distinct that there was a day I woke up one day and just said, and the Lord asked him, do you want more than this? And he said, I do. And he walked away and walked back into the faith. And he said, don't ever underestimate the power of a parent enjoying God and walking with him, saying, because otherwise you're communicating, I need you to do this for me. Well, she suddenly got to like, I'm going to love you. You're going to have to live with your choices, but I'm going to really enjoy the Lord because he really enjoys me. You know what I mean? There was something so powerful about a thriving walk with God. I'd love for you to speak to that.
Oh, I think that's wonderful. And I have a couple of thoughts. One thing I forgot to say earlier is that encouraging this parent is that somewhere between about 75% and 80% of kids who identify as transgender, once they've worked through adolescence, will revert back to their gender identity matching their biological sex. Hmm. Now, not all do that, but most actually return in that fashion. And I would say the other thing related to what you're saying is sometimes this takes time. I mean, this might be a difficult truth, but we've got to look at our kids, especially going through something as difficult as this, saying, you know what, I'm in this for the long haul. Could be a few weeks, could be a few months, could be a few years, but I'm going to trust God through it. I'm going to work on my relationship with God, like you said. I'm going to work on my relationship with this child. Even when things get messy, I'm not going to stop loving them. And that frees up, I think, a kid and the parent to just love them and ultimately leave them in God's hands.
Hmm. I think the title is Messy Grace. I'm going to have to dig in, but I interviewed a gal a while back who has whose daughter identified more. She was pursuing and exploring the idea of becoming transgender, and they wrote this book together, and it was amazing how she expressed, when my mom did this, this is how I reacted, and the mom learning to walk this out and keep relationship and stay connected with God and hold to her convictions. So, friend, email me if you want, and I'll do some digging to see if that's the book. She has one follow-up question for you, Sean. She says, at what point do we use tough love and say, if you need to leave, we'll let you go, kind of like the prodigal? At what point do you do that?
You know what? I just hesitate to give you a specific point on the air, not knowing the details of the circumstances. Now, when a kid is a minor, I can't imagine that point almost ever comes. That's very different when a kid is 18, 19, yeah, 20 years old. So I would really encourage this parent to go sit down with a pastor, talk through the details. And because there's so much involved and it's such a sensitive case, I just don't know that I could tell you through the air right now.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Thank you so much, friend. All right. So I'm switching gears a little bit back to some of the content in the book where you talk about those who leave Christianity. You say those who leave Christianity aren't necessarily leaving God. Make that distinction in what that is and what that's about.
Yeah, well, the way we frame it in the book is actually very careful, because we hear there's a lot of abuse of statistics about 30, 40, 80% of kids leave the faith. Well, there is a significant number of young people who disengage and leave the church. Now, that doesn't mean they leave the faith. Some of them do leave the faith, but many of them don't. So that's an important distinction to keep in mind, so we're not alarmist about what's happening with this generation. Actually, Susie, what we're seeing is in Bible teaching and believing churches, you're not seeing kids leave in droves. That's actually not happening. What we're seeing is a huge segment of in previous generations where people defined themselves by their faith and religion. Now, when it comes to faith and religion, this generation is less likely to identify themselves through that lens. So there's a significant growth in what's called the nuns. And I think a lot of the people that are the nuns just really didn't believe in previous generations, but still took the Christian mantra. And now we're just seeing people who either don't really believe or just believe very weakly, or it's not important to them, just don't define themselves that way anymore. So I think that's what we have to keep in mind. Now, when it comes to those disengaging the church with Gen Z, because people are getting married later and having less kids, which is typically when people who leave the church come back, because Gen Zers and millennials, there's trends pushing those off. The question is, are we going to see them returning back to the church the way previous generations did? And to some degree, that's still an open question.
Okay, so let's think about these two different groups of Gen Zs. You've got some maybe shrugging their shoulders going, you know, I've been studying science in college, or I've discovered evolution, and it doesn't fit for me. I don't believe it anymore. They're more dismissing the idea of God, the Bible, that kind of thing. Then there's the other group that you were just talking about, who were raised in the church and maybe saw some very real incongruencies, things that really are legitimate criticisms, if you will, of church, maybe saying one thing, seeing another, and they get so disillusioned by it that they're disillusioned with the institution of the church. But privately, they still very much love Jesus. Is your approach reaching these two people groups quite different, or what do you say?
Yes, it definitely is different. In fact, for me, really the way I reach anybody is I always try to find what's the question behind the question. And what I mean by that is I had somebody just hung up on hell for the longest time. I gave every response from C.S. Lewis I could think of. And then finally dawned on me, I was like, oh, you really don't believe that human beings are sinful and you think we're naturally good. If you believe that, then guess what? Hell is total overkill. I had another young person talking to me forever, and finally I stopped. He had all these objections. I said, I just don't think this is really your objection. What's going on? And he goes, well, I'm actually signed up for a fraternity, and I just want to have fun for a while. I said, okay, now we're talking. The question behind the question is, you think Christianity steals all your fun, and freedom is living however you want to. So whenever I'm talking with anybody, I'm just trying to ask, if I can, with God's wisdom and sensitivity, what's the real issue going on here? Is it emotional hurt at the church? Are you convinced that Christianity is false? Was there a relational break? Is there a moral issue? What's really at stake? And then try to address the heart of the issue for that individual. I think that's just wisdom, and I think it's honoring to the person. And sometimes people leave and disconnect and don't even really know why they do. Hmm. That's why Proverbs talks about a man's, you know, thoughts are deep, and a person of wisdom can pull them out. So I try to just look for the question behind the question, the real issue that's going on, and then just address it as best I can.
Okay, so do that. You're out to coffee with somebody who was deeply hurt by a church leader in a legitimate way. It wasn't just interpretation. It really was a painful thing. And then over and over again, just saw these inconsistencies. And they deep inside do have a tenderness towards the things of God, but a major distrust of the big show, of the big institution. What kinds of questions would you ask? What would you say to encourage them?
You know, I probably would just listen to them and ask about their journey. Tell me when you first came to faith. Tell me why you were a believer. Tell me about positive experiences you've had in the church. Tell me as much as you're comfortable about the pain that you experienced from this person. How does it make you view the church? What would it take for you to find a different kind of church that's healthier, maybe smaller? And have you considered, would you come back if those, you know, the pain that you've experienced could, you could find an environment that would be different from the pain that you'd experienced? I would just listen to the person and try to unpack, get to the heart of where they're at. And if I had a story in common or knew somebody else who had been through the same thing, I'd probably share that with them. If they love Jesus, maybe bring them to the scriptures and talk about how important the church is, and just very sensitively and patiently try to reconnect this person back if they're open to it. Probably knowing if the hurt is that deep, it might take a little bit of time for them to trust again.
What I hear from you over and over again, which I love, is just not to be intimidated by their doubts, their questions, their hurts, but to go right in and just dare to ask about them. I don't know why, but I think maybe we feel ill-equipped to answer objections, questions, criticisms, and so we avoid the conversation altogether, which speaks loudly, doesn't it, to the heart that's hurting or wandering.
You know, Susie, one of the things that I do around the country when I speak is I do this thing called the atheist encounter, and I put glasses on, and I become an atheist, and I take questions from the audience and shoot them down as an atheist would, and then I take the glasses off, and very quickly the audience realizes that they got testy, sometimes hostile, defensive. And then I'll ask, okay, why do you think we got so defensive? And I point out to them, I say, I think it's because maybe we don't really know what we believe and why we believe it. If we don't really know why we think the Bible's true and God exists and think about creation and why God allows evil, and someone presses us on that, it's human nature to get defensive. But if we've taken the time to think through our convictions and know what we believe and why we believe it, then I think we're less threatened from somebody who sees the world differently. That's why apologetics is so important. That's what Jim and I are doing in the book, is encouraging adults to train themselves, but also here's ways to do this with this generation so they're not threatened when they hear a new question. They're not bothered by questions because they realize that we don't have all the answers, but Christianity really makes sense, and there's an answer out there if we're willing to find it.
And I would imagine I don't know is really an okay answer to give as well, but just the willingness to build relationship, build some bridges, ask some questions. We need to pause here for our last break, talking to Dr. Sean McDowell. He co-authored with J. Warner Wallace the book So the Next Generation Will Know, Preparing Young Christians for a Challenging World. Fantastic book. 4 copies to give away. Email or text. You can email middays@myfaithradio.com, or you can text 877-933-2484. Don't forget a question comment if you've got it. When we come back, we'll get a question about how a Christian parent can help their children maintain faith if they attend public schools. We'll address that one when we come back.
When did I forget that you've always been the king of the world? I try to take life back right out of the hands of the king of the world.
Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson talking to Dr. Sean McDowell, again, who co-authored the book with J. Warner Wallace, So the Next Generation Will Know, Preparing Young Christians for a Challenging World. And Tim writes, and I want to make sure, Tim, you get a copy of the book. He says, please send this book to my daughter, who's on the front lines of this conversation. She's excited to receive it as she's a 7th, 8th grade teacher in a Christian mission school. I say mission because 90% of the students are non-Christian, but their parents are sending their kids because they want them to have a good moral upbringing. She decided to teach this age group because she realized somebody has to be on the last line of defense or influence before they hit the very difficult high school years. Plus, she teaches in the state of Washington, so I guess that speaks for itself. The saving grace is she's a good Minnesota-raised girl soldiering on with a good foundation based on LEFSA. Love that. So thank you, Tim. We're going to try get you a copy of the book for sure. Okay, here's a question for you, Sean. How can a Christian parent help their children maintain faith if they attend public schools? They are engaged at church and youth group activities on the weekends, but the majority of their days are spent in secular environments. It seems those younger years are critical, as easily influenced and have a deep desire to fit in, even at the risk of abandoning everything that they've been taught. How do we train our kids to live in the world but not of the world? What do you say?
That's exactly the question that we have to ask. So the typical 15-year-old right now gets 27 hours of screen time per year versus 153 in spiritual teaching such as youth group. I mean, let that sink in. 2,700 hours of screen time versus 153 in spiritual teaching. So if we think just sending our kids to youth group is going to be sufficient to shape their worldview, it's just not going to happen almost ever today. So we have a bunch of strategies in the book, and here's just two ways to think about it. One is, as parents, to be very intentional with the spiritual opportunities that are right there in front of us. So here's an example of something I did with my son recently. 15 years old, he expressed interest in seeing this movie, Bohemian Rhapsody, about the rock group Queen. And at first I was a little bit hesitant. I thought, well, I don't know. There's some sexuality messages within this. It's PG-13. I think there's an agenda in the film. I read a little more, and I said, okay, I got an idea. Son, I'll take you and a friend whose parent is okay with it if, when we're done, we just come back and debrief it, and we talk about it. He goes, sure. So it was a Friday night a few months ago. We went to the movie, came back home, and we sat down at the – well, in probably 20 or 30 minutes, we talked about it. I didn't lecture him. I just said, hey, what'd you like in the film? Did you think what do you think the theme of the film was? Were there any parts of the film you thought that were not really accurate? Maybe they had an agenda that they wove in. Is there any positive elements of the film? As Christians, how should we think about it? And we basically just discussed it. So partly what we're doing in the book is trying to help parents say, let's be more strategic about these opportunities that are right in front of us and use them to spiritually engage the kids to counter the other messages they're getting. Second would be something as simple as when parents ask me, what's one thing I can do to shape the worldview of my kids? I'll tell them, send them to Summit. Send them to Summit Ministries. And we talk about this in the book. It's a 12-day worldview conference for students. My co-author, J. Warner Wallace, and I both speak there regularly. And it's fun. There's relationships. There's interaction. But they bring in some of the top Christian speakers to talk about science and faith, to talk about how we know the Bible is true, politics, economics, all these – like I just did a session this earlier this week on how do you look at movies through a Christian worldview. And that is an experience outside of our normal kind of environment where we hear this teaching from compelling people who like young people – help them think Christianly. If any parent is like, I just don't even know where to start with this stuff, send them to Summit Ministries And it's really a game changer for so many kids in their faith.
Wow, thank you so much for that. Well, here's an intimidating question when you're asked it. And I would love to know how to equip a parent if they're getting this from maybe their college student. Okay, what scientific proof do you have that God exists? How would you suggest a parent answer that?
Oh, I would say a few things. One is if they've done their homework, I'd say, well, the beginning of the universe points towards a beginner. The fine-tuning of the universe, the laws of physics and cosmology, point towards a fine-tuner. The information in a cell points towards an author of life. I would actually point this young person towards the scientific evidence. Now, probably in conversation, rather than dumping all that on the person, I would say, hey, that's a great question. What kind of scientific evidence would you accept as pointing towards God? You see how I'm going to lead with a question when they say, is there any scientific evidence God exists? I would say, okay, what kind of scientific evidence would you consider? And what kind of scientific evidence have you even looked at? So I wrote a book with a friend of mine called Is God Just Human Invention? And we have chapters in there on how the laws of physics are exquisitely fine-tuned, which points towards a cosmic fine-tuner, how the beginning of the universe points towards a beginner. Information in the cell points towards an author of life. The information is out there if people are willing to access it. Now, there's also some really great short videos. I mean, I actually just did a video, I think it's 3 or 4 minutes, and a youth pastor or parent could find on YouTube, and it just says 5 arguments for the existence of God. It's on my YouTube channel, and it's like 3 or 4 minutes. Show that to a young person is another idea and say, hey, what do you think? And that's how you start the conversation.
You also tell the story in the book about a student who asked you when you were teaching a class about the minimal work required just to get a passing grade, because really he just wanted his parents to pay for car insurance. And then one day, I think he was in junior college or in college, and he showed back up in your class just to sit in on the class, and you were sort of surprised to see him. So after you asked him, is there anything I could have done better to motivate you for your future and prepare you for your future, what did he say to you?
Well, first off, you got the story right, Susie, all the details. So good job. You read it carefully. I can tell. And what he said to me is he goes, I asked him, I said, what could I have done differently to motivate you in high school? He goes, oh, nothing. I said, nothing. He goes, why? He goes, I just wasn't there spiritually. I didn't really care. But when I got to college and was challenged by my professors and fellow students, all of a sudden I realized I better know this. So he did say, though, he goes, even in your class, you were having more of an impact on me than you realized, and I even knew at the time. So I include that in there as an encouragement to parents. Even if kids don't give the great spiritual response you want, they're still listening. I mean, at the dinner table not long ago, I was sharing some with my kids. My 14-year-old turns to me, he goes, hey, Dad, gives me the thumbs up. He goes, good speech, Dad. Way to go. And I thought, oh, my gosh, now my son's giving me a hard time. And I laughed, and I said, that's okay. You know I'm trying real hard here. I'm never going to give up because I love you, and just moved on. So have a long-term perspective when it comes to the faith of our kids.
We just got a moment here left before we're ready to wrap. But, you know, it seems because, like this student, you can't make them care about things. And so the first line of defense, or I would say the first two things, walk intimately with God on your own. But pursue these relationships. Show them that you love them. They're not a project. You're not trying to just get them to a decision. You care about their whole lives, right?
That's right. Even the rich young ruler walked away from Jesus in the flesh, and he let him go. I mean, Jesus says over Jerusalem, he says, oh, Jerusalem, I wish I could gather you like a hen gathers her chicks. So that's the heart of God when we want this generation to respond. And they don't. We keep loving them. We keep praying for them. We keep building the relationship. We keep looking for opportunities to engage them. And we don't give up. And we trust God through the process. That's the challenge.
Wow. Well, Sean, I hope you'll come back and talk with us again. I think this is such an important conversation. We need to be equipped. Thank you for all the work that you do for the kingdom. We sure appreciate you.
Thanks for having me on, for asking great questions.
Appreciate it very much. It's Sean McDowell, friends. Title of his book, So the Next Generation Will Know, Preparing Your Young Christians for a Challenging World. Remember, we've got some copies to give away. Text or email middays@myfaithradio.com or 877-933-2484. We'll meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to this Middays with Susie Larson podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of Middays with Susie Larson.